and 98.1 FM W251 BU Kenosha.
And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is the CBS News World News Roundup Late Edition, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Monica Ricks. A groundbreaking verdict in Michigan today where a school shooter's mother has been convicted on murder charges. CBS's Matt Piper reports she now faces up to 60 years in prison.
She is the first parent in the United States to go on trial in a mass shooting carried out by their child.
We find the defendant guilty of involuntary manslaughter.
A jury finding Jennifer Crumbly guilty on all four counts of involuntary manslaughter. Her son shot and killed four students at his school in 2021. The parents are accused of not getting their son the necessary help for his mental health needs and for purchasing the gun for their son, which was used in the shooting. The father's trial begins next month.
President Biden blames former President Trump for a shift in Republican support for a bipartisan border bill.
Every day between now and November, the American people are going to know that the only reason the border is not secure is Donald Trump and his MAGA Republican friends. It's time for Republicans in the Congress to show a little courage. To show a little spine.
Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell was pretty disappointed, too. He said so on Capitol Hill.
Obviously, with a Democratic president and a Democratic Senate, our negotiators had to deal with them. And James Langford, under those situations, did a remarkable job.
A test vote set in the Senate tomorrow. Defense officials looking into the drone attack that killed three American service members in Jordan say the U.S. never detected the drone because it likely came in too low or was confused for one of its own. The base also didn't have an air defense system capable of shooting it down. It had relied on electronics to jam them instead. Here at home, the feds are exposing why a door panel blew on an Alaskan Airlines flight last month. Here's CBS's Allison Keyes.
The NTSB's preliminary report finds that four bolts were missing and that there were five damaged rivets on the door plug that blew out in mid-flight on the Alaska Airlines Boeing 737 MAX 9 jet on January 5th. Seven passengers and one crew member had minor injuries.
Inspectors will be posting up at Boeing plants to avoid another incident. Nevada primary voters are divided today in Las Vegas.
I actually voted for none of the above here because the primary here didn't include all of the people. And I'll be going in Thursday for the caucus to vote for Trump.
Doesn't matter. I don't want Trump in there at all. He's not worth a cheater, liar. People falling around like sheep.
Trump's expected to win the state's 26 delegates in Thursday's caucus. And GoFundMe says crowdfunding campaigns have now generated $30 billion since 2010. 150 million people have either sent or received money on its platform, mostly thanks to Gen Z and millennials. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
WRJN.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Wisconsin's U.S. senators are split on a bill to increase border security and provide aid for Ukraine and Israel. Tammy Baldwin says she has concerns but plans to vote for it. Ron Johnson says he's against it. The Senate holds a procedural vote tomorrow. Experts say expanding the child tax credit would lift as many as 400,000 American kids above the poverty line in 1 year. Chris Cox is with the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities.
Half of kids who don't get the full credit now, their families will gain $600 or more from the bill. And about 40% of kids who don't get the full credit now, their families will gain $1,000 or more from this bill.
A bill to revive the expanded credit passed the U.S. House last week. Final adoption, though, is not guaranteed. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
The Packers making defensive changes. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Packers revamping their defensive coaching staff under new defensive coordinator Jeff Hafley, who has hired Vince Ogabasi as the new defensive line coach, replacing Jerry Montgomery. Ogabasi worked for Hafley at Boston College. Last night at the Super Bowl, players and coaches asked a lot of out-of-the-box questions at opening night. Of course, Travis Kelce asked about girlfriend Taylor Swift.
She seems to be enjoying the games. She's a part of Chiefs Kingdom right now. It's fun seeing her enjoy the game of football, knowing that it's kind of new to her life.
The Chiefs' Andy Reid, asked by comedian Carrot Top about his secrets for his body shape and energy.
Yeah, lots of cheeseburgers.
NBA, the Milwaukee Bucks road trip continues tonight in Phoenix against the Suns. College basketball, the Badgers slip from 6th to 11th ranked in the nation. They're on the road tomorrow afternoon in Ann Arbor against the Michigan Wolverines. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
WRJN.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Dense fog advisory tonight for low visibility. Cloudy and foggy tonight. Lows in the mid-30s. For tomorrow, more clouds around and warm again with highs in the upper 40s. Rain ahead for Thursday, even some thunder. Highs in the low 50s and becoming breezy. Colder for Friday and the weekend. Right now it's 33.
Did you know this local radio station is part of Civic Media? Learn more about the entire network at civicmedia.us.
Like a touchdown on your radio dial. Yeah! And home of the Packers. 1400 AM and 99.9 and 98.1 FM, WRJN.
This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Welcome. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Johnny Lupinacci, I see you, man. You look great. How are you doing,
hey,
my friend?
Doing all right. Doing all right. It's Tuesday, you know, second day of the work week. So, you know,
this is our normal day, right? Typically, right? We've been doing Tuesdays for what, 5 years now, and here it is, you know, Tuesday. But we were on Monday last week. You know, in case you're wondering what we're talking about, it's Busted Pencils 5 days a week now: Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Check it out. And if you're somewhere else, you know, make sure you're out there, download the Civic Media app. That way you can listen to us wherever you are on your phone. Annoy people when you're sitting there at the restaurant. Turn Tim and Johnny on. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Use the Civic Media app. Johnny, great guest, great show tonight. We have covered, though, this topic. We're going to get a little bit more in depth. Hey, news out there to the world. There's a teacher shortage right now. Just in case anybody hasn't been paying attention, and that would be you, my neighbor, who we're talking to. My neighbor, there's a teacher shortage. However, Johnny,
who knew?
Who knew? But before we get to our guest, I know producer Anya has queued up a piece. We're going to listen to a little segment here. Anya, let's let that roll, please.
7.5 million American students, or roughly 15% of them, have disabilities that qualify them for special instruction, what's known as individual education plans. But teachers trained in this critical area are in short supply. At the beginning of the current school year, 70% of schools surveyed said they had openings for special education teachers. We asked special education teachers and administrators to tell us how the shortage is affecting them.
You're spread thin, you know, and you're working with a student on a lesson to meet their academic goals, but you're also thinking about the student behind you who's working on maybe feeding or they're getting their medications, and you're thinking, how can I support that student when I'm working with another
student? There it is, Johnny. Special education teacher shortage. Well, let's get to our guest. Our guest, she has broad expertise in the preparation of teachers who work with students with disabilities and providing instruction to students with disabilities to improve their long-term academic and social behavioral outcomes. She is currently the Director of Teacher Education and Certification Officer for UW-Madison, University of Wisconsin-Madison. Welcome to Busted Pencils, Dr. Kimber Wilkerson. Kimber, how are you?
I am doing well. It's so nice to be here.
It's so nice to see you, man. It's been a while. Johnny, Kimber and I, you know, used to in the Wisconsin, you know, made some noise at the time.
Hey, look great.
So, Kimber, that was from the piece that was on, I think it was National Public Radio, where they're talking about this. Kimber, there's a teacher education shortage. lay it out for us, like what's happening, why, what's going on, first response, what do we do? That's what's going to be the whole show, so you're not going to obviously answer all those questions. But Kim, how did we get to a special education teacher shortage?
Well, there has always been a special education teacher shortage. So, you know, special education became, you know, mandatory in public schools in the 70s. And even from the beginning, there was not enough, there were not enough teachers to fill the openings. And there were certain kinds of, you know, assignments within special education that had the most kind of chronic shortages. So any job where people were going to work directly with kids with, you know, significant needs, kids with emotional, behavioral kinds of challenges, those mm-hmm. were positions that were sort of people were least likely to want, right? And right. they left them quickly. So there's always been this kind of every year in the fall, kind of this clawing around trying to find people to fill these positions. And then, you know, in the last 10 years, as there's been more of a, you know, shortage, and mm-hmm. I put that in air quotes, but
yeah,
as there have been less, you know, teachers interested in staying in their jobs or less people entering the field, that's kind of hit special education even harder, right? So it was the position that people were less interested in from the beginning, and then, you know, just hit harder within all of this.
I like the way that, not like, but there's always been a shortage of special education teachers. And you point out, though, too, because it's hard work. And all teaching, you know, and Johnny and I are going to say all teaching's hard work. But special education, it's hard work. And people potentially looked and said, yeah, you know, and I saw that as a potential opportunity for me when I was learning to be a teacher. And I said, no, I can't do that. That's not my passion. That's not where I see my ability to do my best work. But boy, I can see people who get in there and go, like, they need to be there. They're the best. And you just think about, you know, these are our children who, you know, they have the significant needs. The ability, there's always been a shortage, but here we are now faced with, let's be honest, it's crisis, isn't it, Kimber?
I'd say it feels that way in many schools and districts, yes.
Okay, so when they're, go ahead, you want to jump on.
Well, you know, I was just going to say this issue of, I do think there's, in some ways, special ed always has a PR problem, and that might extend to the general society and the way we think about disability. You know, mm-hmm. that people see something as being very challenging instead of thinking, well, this is just the spectrum of way people present in life. And, you know, we don't necessarily have to treat people with differences all that differently, you know. But of course, there is specialized knowledge. And of course, there are, you know, skills and, you know, things that people need to know about the law. So I'm not suggesting that it doesn't take some kind of specialized knowledge. And I'm not suggesting that there might be some people with, you know, certain personalities or, you know, ways of approaching difference that might make them better for the job. Mm-hmm. But I do think sometimes, like I say, I feel like it's almost like a PR problem for disability combined with a PR problem for being a teacher, right?
Well, there's so much in that, the way you say it. It's just, okay, special education. I could, you know, right now I could see my neighbor going, oh, those kids, right? I mean, and, well, yeah, I don't know who's going to work with those kids. Or I remember those kids. Or, you know, hey, I used to hang out with one of those kids. Johnny, did you have any of those kids in your classrooms?
Absolutely. But I've taught both in special education classroom and then in what we called at the time mainstreamed.
Mm-hmm.
Schools. But you know, coming back to this, I think, you know, you're both talking about this crisis on top of a crisis, and it's a right. larger understanding of how we in general approach becoming a teacher, right? And the certain dispositions and the certain ways, you know, from go, we also within even our own programs, Tim, we talk about this a lot, right? We separated out special education and education and regular education as though there's like
right.
this mystical different thing that happens. And Dr. Wilkerson talked to this, you know, there are certainly things that
special educators. I even hate that term, right? Except they absolutely are superstar educators, right? But the idea that we've set up this separation or this exclusionary way of understanding what's required of being a great teacher. And fortunately for myself, I mean, again, it's a PR problem. Again, it's an internal messaging problem. I didn't realize that some of the best teachers that would mentor me as a as a new teacher and as even a veteran teacher always learning, we're special educators. We're folks who were receiving a little bit, I don't want to even say more, but a different kind of focus from experts who were teaching them to be teachers through a lens I wish we all had. And and Dr. Wilkinson brings us this tremendous ability to discern and embrace and value difference. Right. I truly believe that, and I hate these terms special education, that really good special educators and special education programs make the best teachers. And it's not easy, but they do a great job because the capacity to handle that we have learners with different needs, so that some we can see those different needs, some we have to learn about them, but we have to have flexibility and capacity to understand those differences and to value them and to value that there is a person learning in that classroom. There is always a person first learning, and that, you know, we've somehow, again, like we've picked on schools for a long time, sorted it out in a way that doesn't quite exactly make sense for all that we know about how we ought to live together in communities, in families, and that's why I know the terms are really problematic, but I really enjoy teaching. It was kind of called a mainstreamed program because we had the supports. We had special educators and regular educators. We had good educators working together. We had supports that made our classroom communities more like the communities we were realistically not only living in, but wanted to be living in, where we embraced one another as members of our classroom community with those differences.
I wonder if this is though too, maybe a little bit of terminology here. Kimber, IEP, okay, and Johnny was talking about, you know, differences in students. IEP stands for what?
Individualized Education Program. And so essentially this is a document, right, that lays out what this individual kid needs that is going to be different or distinct or you know, additional to what every other student, whether you call that regular or you call that general, you know, like whatever you call those, that classroom of students, typical. So if a student needs something additional, an adaptation, a modification, a change, they need some special services, they need access to a speech language pathologist, they need access to adaptive equipment, you know, all different kinds of things they might need. And those are laid out in that document, that individualized education program.
Well, you, and the way you said it too, I think for people to understand the spectrum or the continuum of recognizing, you know, what is special education? Well, it could be an intellectual issue. It can be physical. It can be physical and intellectual at the same time. But recognizing what we said is that there are differences, and that some children have a little bit more of an emphasis, I'd say, on some of those differences that requires teachers with a specialized knowledge to be able to look at, work with, develop that individual education plan, because that individual has those needs a little bit above and beyond, quote, the classroom. And so we are talking special education teachers.
You're listening to WRJN Southeastern Wisconsin's home for the Todd Allball Show.
Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected to your local community. Here's Terry Barr with the Civic Media Radio Network.
There's a renewed effort underway to save historic buildings across Racine County. The nonprofit Preservation Racine is behind the mission.
We have a mission to identify and actively encourage the preservation of buildings, sites,
and districts in the Racine County area.
Pippin Michelli with Preservation Racine. Michelli says the group is starting to list homes and businesses that deserve preservation consideration.
If we're not watchful, no one makes a decision about these things, and they get lost or ruined for new developments.
Preservation Racine is also looking to add more volunteers to support the effort. You can find more information, including meeting times, at preservationracine.org. Until next time, I'm Terry Barr.
You're listening to News Talk and Sports for Racine and Kenosha, WRJN.
No one can be. If every page was torn from the magazine, would cast still trapped a media machine?
Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Our guest, Dr. Kimber Wilkerson from the University of Wisconsin-Madison, special education, individual education plans. We have talked on this show for the last few years about the teacher shortage. And I say, Kimber, and you knew this too, that I don't call it a shortage. We have a teacher exodus. We have an exodus. We have a problem. Special education teachers, I was talking about this during the break, Kimber, how, if I become a special education teacher, because we said, what are some of the causes of the shortage? Do special education teachers stay in the field? What are the challenges to staying? I graduate, I got my special education degree, I go out and I start practicing. How long do I stay in the field?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. And that number, the answer has decreased over time. Right. In recent years, it has decreased. So special educators, the sort of the average number of years that someone stays in the profession has always been slightly lower than it is for general educators. And it's also slightly lower for teachers of color. But as we have, you know, in the last 5 years, let's say that the average length of stay for special educators has decreased even more. So we see a lot of people who they go to school, they get their degree, they start in the field, and then after 2 years, they are ready to be done. They are, unfortunately, because of the shortage. So whatever you attribute that to, and it's probably attributed to many things, right? You know, the lack of autonomy that teachers experience, the erosion of their benefits and pay, the erosion of public respect for the teaching profession, all kinds of things, in addition to whatever was there before for special education. But now, when you are in a school setting, for a special educator, you would be assigned a caseload. So you have a certain number of students with disabilities who you are responsible for making sure they have the things that they need. Sometimes some special educators work with the kids in a separate classroom, right? Some special educators pull kids out of classrooms and work with them for, let's say, reading, work with them for math, study skills, things like that, and send them back. And sometimes they co-teach with a general educator. And so they're working together in a classroom, and that special educator is, you know, making sure the needs of those kids with disabilities in that room are met. So whatever it is, like their day-to-day work of how they interact with kids and other professionals can vary greatly depending on the model that a school uses, but they have a caseload. So those are the kids that they write their IEPs, the individualized education programs. Yep. They meet with the families. They might track and monitor how they'll set with collaboratively with parents and other teachers, set goals for the kid. And they'll kind of take data and see how the kid is progressing and see if anything needs to change. They'll collaborate, you know, check in with the other service providers. A lot of times kids work with, they might see a social worker or a school psychologist or a speech language person or an occupational therapist. So there's a lot of other professionals who might interact with the kid as well. And so sometimes that special educator is like the case manager, like the, you know, they're the person who is the connects with all those other professionals and kind of tracks everything. So they have a lot of work to do. Plus they have this, they're teaching, you know?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. So the way you paint that picture is to realize, and I think everybody has a vision of their teacher and what their teacher did growing up, and they remember. And some people may even, quote, remember the special education teacher or the special education room. But what you're talking about, Kimber, too, is and not, you know, when I was a fifth grade teacher, I had lots of other extra responsibilities, too. But the fact is that I didn't have a caseload of other students on top of the teaching responsibilities. And so pointing that out, you'd say, you know, so the workload of a special educator is different. Right. And it could potentially then create this, you know, sense of saying, wow, this is a lot of work. Now, if we're looking, though, to say, how do we incentivize people to stay in the field longer? I know somebody's saying, go, well, you know, let's do something about it. Let's do it. You, though, laid forth a whole bunch of reasons. Let's talk about one, though. And I wonder how this, because for me, this is a key issue. What do you mean by job autonomy? How is that an issue with the special education teacher? I mean, why do they need autonomy? Don't they just follow the script?
Yeah, I don't think there's a script. But I do think that, you know, as teachers are feel like they have more kind of creativity in terms of, you know, more room to come up with individual, you know, accommodations for a kid, meaning solutions. Like if a kid is struggling with something in the classroom, then the special ed teacher's job is to kind of work with the general educator and come up with tweaks they might need to make so that the kid can be successful. And one thing that, you know, this is, I'll circle to your autonomy point, but one of the problems with the shortage is that the caseload of those teachers has increased. So it used to be that a teacher would have 12, 8, 15 students on their caseload. And now if you work at a school where there used to be 3 special educators and now there's 2, now instead of you each having a caseload of 10, you each have a caseload of 15. And now let's say you're the only special educator in the building and you have a caseload of 30. And I see this happen. You know, we have our graduates from our program at UW-Madison who are, I think, well-prepared, you know, like committed, and they'll go out to a school. And I have just, like, literally just this week talked to someone who got her master's degree, was very excited to be a special educator, and is in her first year of teaching. And she was notified sort of in the middle of recess duty one day that her caseload was being, that one of the teachers had left. You know, this was January, and that right. Because of that, the other remaining teachers were going to have to take over that person's caseload. And in fact, they changed her caseload completely and put her in a different classroom. So she was very kind of crushed because she'd worked really hard to establish relationships. And, you know, and now that she was just being told, like, on a Wednesday afternoon that starting tomorrow on Thursday, you have a different caseload. So, and you have a bigger caseload. So it's that kind of stuff is, you know, demoralizing. Mm-hmm. And it makes people feel like they don't have control over their work environment, and they're, you know, they can work really hard and then things, you know, things keep changing and shifting. And for special educators, that increase in caseload size means that you can give less attention to kids. So I think one of the reasons people go into special education, or a thing that they enjoy, is you get those individual relationships. Like I listed all those things you have to do for an IEP, but that means you're getting to know that kid. You're getting to know their family. You're like checking in with that person. You're advocating for that person. Like you have a relationship, and the bigger your caseload and the more it changes, that relationship piece is, you know, compromised. And that one of the things that you took as a joy in your job is now being removed. So I think that's one of the, you know, real, unfortunate artifacts of less teachers is that it just keeps, you know, it's this cyclical thing and it makes it even harder.
Just keeps building. The caseload continues to increase. Special education teacher shortage. Our guest, Dr. Kimber Wilkerson, University of Wisconsin-Madison. Got some questions. Give us a call, 844-967-2789. Give us a call when we get back.
I hope you choke on every pill. You're listening to WRJN, Southeastern Wisconsin's home for Matt and Aaron
on Air. CBS News Special Report, two key votes in the U.S. House. First, three Republicans joined Democrats in voting down an effort to impeach President Biden's Homeland Security Secretary, Alejandro Mayorkas, in a drive to punish the administration over its handling of the U.S.-Mexico border. The vote was 214 to 216. More from CBS's Nicole Skanga.
Moving forward, we're going to see these really tight votes. But at the end of the day, it is a no on impeachment for Secretary Mayorkas, and certainly a bit of a political embarrassment for the speaker, who thought that he might have the votes here.
The House is likely to revisit plans to impeach Mayorkas. Meantime, the House has also rejected a Republican-led bill that would provide $17.6 billion to Israel.
On this vote, the yeas are 250, the nays are 180.
Democrats said they wanted a vote instead on a broader measure that would also provide aid to Ukraine, international humanitarian funding, and new money for border security. CBS News Special Report, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
WRJN.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Former Green Bay Packers star quarterback Brett Favre still owes money in his welfare fraud case. Mississippi auditor Shad White is suing Favre for $730,000 in fines and interest on the money he took for speeches that he never gave. Favre was never charged with any crime. Deepfake images and voices are already creeping into political ads around the country. Wisconsin lawmakers don't want it to happen here. Representative Adam Nealon tells WISN-TV's Upfront the bill to label AI in political ads has bipartisan support.
This isn't a Republican issue. This isn't a Democratic issue. This is an issue that affects everybody. And that's why we wanted to make it a broad coalition and earn that bipartisan support and make sure that it's signed by the governor.
The bill would impose a $1,000 fine for violations. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer.
What's on your to-do list? Check your mail? Get groceries? How about getting your annual vaccines? We can help you check that off.
You've got this.
Yes, you do. Because we've got you. With local vaccine events and access to transportation, protecting yourself and your loved ones is not a chore anymore.
You've got this.
A message from the Aging and Disability Vaccination Collaborative, powered by U.S. Aging. Funded by the U.S. Administration for Community Living through a grant to U.S. Aging. Learn more at yougotthis.usaging.org.
WRJN.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Dense fog advisory tonight for low visibility. Cloudy and foggy tonight. Lows in the mid-30s. For tomorrow, more clouds around and warm again with highs in the upper 40s. Rain ahead for Thursday, even some thunder. Highs in the low 50s and becoming breezy. Colder for Friday and the weekend. Right now it's 33.
Earl Ingram.
My special guest is the curator and founder of Wisconsin's Black Historical Society, none other than Claiborne Benson.
I want people to know that Wisconsin has a beautiful, rich African-American history. Many people think the King celebration and all of those other kinds of things are more important. They occurred in Wisconsin as well, and we've impacted the entire nation.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. This is News Talk and Sports for Racine and Kenosha, WRJN.
Are you ready to enjoy retirement? How would you like to live in a place dedicated to your comfort while allowing you the freedom to live an active and worry-free lifestyle? Fountain Hills offers condo-style apartments, and their residents enjoy going out for lunches and dinners, grocery shopping, playing cards and bingo with other residents, all while using extra precautions to keep their senior residents safe. To explore becoming a Fountain Hills resident, see Fountain Hills Apartments. Or call 262-886-9200.
Hi, I'm Pete Schwabe, an actor, writer, director, and comedian. Join me for my new show, Nightlight, here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll chill after a long day in traffic, talking politics, or trying to look busy at work. We'll talk movies, TV, theater, music, and lots of fun Wisconsin stuff. So mix an old-fashioned and join the discussion. We'll go from Wisconsin to Hollywood and back, and you can still be in bed by 10. It's Nightlight with Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 8 to 10 on 1400 AM and 99.9 and 98.1 FM WRJN.
When you think about it, talk radio is its own type of sport. News Talk and Sports, 1400 AM and 99.9 and 98.1 FM WRJN.
Go ahead and dance if you want. It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. That's what we're doing. If you're in there watching the live stream, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, you can see, yeah, you know, Johnny and Tim, they're okay to look at too, even sometimes.
Hopping around.
They're dancing. Oh, educated educators talking education. Our guest, Dr. Kimber Wilkerson, University of Wisconsin-Madison, the special education teacher shortage. The number is 844-967-2789. You know, right now, your special education teacher out there listening, call us. Let us know, you know, what is going on in the field. We need to hear from you. Make that put out there. You know, but Kimber, as we come at this, you know, people are going, okay, so what do we do about it? You know, what do we do about it? And I want to give you a situation that, and you tell me if this is a what we should do about it. Let's figure out and let's find people who want to do this and then tell them by decree that they are an emergency licensed special education teacher, send them into special education settings, and then tell them while you're working, learn to be a special education teacher. How's that work out?
Yeah.
You can tell in my tone of voice what I think.
Yeah. And, you know, when there's a shortage, one way that teachers are placed is someone gets an emergency license, right? Right. And that person doesn't have the preparation, but they go into the position and they get, as a special educator, up to 3 years to get that fully licensed. The danger, of course, is that if someone's going to get burned out, that's going to happen even faster if they go into a job that requires a lot of, you know, a high degree of skill. And if they go in underprepared, that's just going to lead them to feel, distraught even faster. And of course, there's a drawback for the students who are students and families who have been sort of assigned to this educator who doesn't know all the rights that students have, doesn't know the kinds of whole breadth of services that they might be able to render. And so it just means that no matter how kind of committed that educator is, that emergency certified educator is, they're not going to have all of the, you know, knowledge and skills to be able to most effectively serve that student. And I would say that students with disabilities, given, you know, the higher likelihood of experiencing poor outcomes, that they need to have access to the most well-prepared teachers, not the most underprepared teachers. Yeah.
Okay, I got to ask this, though. When's the last time you got on an airplane with an emergency certified pilot?
When's
the last time you went for surgery with an emergency certified surgeon? Well, you know, Johnny, you get jump in there,
Kim,
man.
And I always provide a little bit of a perspective sometimes, and I agree with you on this. Overall, I really agree. Like, hey, the solution is not let's use this crisis that's manufactured in a sense, but it's real, right? Kids are suffering, teachers are suffering, special educators are spread tremendously thin and already stressed, right? And the hardest thing, like we talked about, when you know how to do a job well and you know you can't do it because the structure and the support around you is beyond that of being able to do your best. It is really almost impossible for educators, especially great educators, to do that day in and day out and not really suffer. And like, it's a demoralization, right? Mm-hmm. But I'll provide the perspective, and I wish this was something more that was more part of this conversation. As a former pro educator in a classroom, that was my pathway to becoming a teacher in a special ed school. I was like, this is what I want to do. And they were like, well, hold on, you actually have to go to school. You have a whole lot of work ahead. But in the meantime, I was working in a really great classroom as a para educator. And I can imagine, and I've had amazing para educators, and some of them even better than the teachers I was teaching with in a school. I can imagine some cases where like an emergency provisional like playbook. Like, hey, I could call an audible and I really need an adult who's really capable and on track to this to maybe be in a learn to be certified kind of context. So I think there's some important flexibility, but it puts a lot of trust in the system and in the school leaders and then the capacity of the school and the district to support great educators becoming teachers.
Yeah.
Right. And so sometimes I think like that special provisional thing is like, oh man, we have a huge shortage and this is going to help us because we have three amazing paraeducators. We've talked about this before, Tim, who the pathway to becoming a teacher is prohibitive. They can't leave their work, their family, their location to do a traditional teacher prep program. And so there are some creative ways. That said, I don't want to use that one case to be like, this is the rationale and reason why we should just lower the requirements.
But I do think you're bringing up a good point. And I will say that in my last several years, I've had the opportunity to work with some programs that are working directly to support people on provisional license, people who are paraeducators going into special education programs. Sometimes those are programs that are sort of highly resourced. I have one right now that's funded by a Teacher Quality Partnership Grant, and they can give people a living stipend. So you can spend a full year getting paid and doing a full year residency, taking classes, getting certified. And at the end of it, you become teacher of record. So it's well resourced. And that's best case scenario. There are other places where people are struggling to, you know, and they are kind of like, well, this person has shown a commitment to, like working with kids with disabilities. They're interested. They're a career changer. It's hard for them to stop work for, have no salary for 2 years, get loans. So they are doing these things, putting people into emergency certified positions and then helping them along the way. I don't think it's ideal, right? Like ideal is a teacher who has the preparation, the certification. I think that gives them sort of the best, strongest grounding to stay and, to nourish them. It's hard to be a full-time teacher in a stressful job and go to school full-time, so all those things. But I do think I have seen some programs where, the pathway, if people are really committed and they have to have support, though, like the emergency cert teachers, sometimes they have someone right next door who's an expert. And then other times they're just floundering and they're in a school where there are no experts because everybody else is new too.
And that's Johnny, that's where I was going it's like show up. I'll be an emergency certified special educator. And then they go in there and, first of all, it's just like, okay, they weren't prepared. They don't have the time. And like Kimber's pointing out too, they are going to be put in a position to work with children who have the most needs. And yet we're going to put people who have the least training. The emergency certified, like you're saying, Johnny, provisional, are there pathways for committed individuals to get there that have the support systems in place? Yeah, I'm for that. It's just, every time there's a shortage and somebody says, well, teaching, everybody knows how to do it. Just let anybody do it. Why do we even need a teaching license? And that, that's kind of where I'm coming at that from that point of view is going, look, you actually exacerbate the problem by doing that because I saw this, pretty extensively at one of the past places I was at to see that the number of emergency certified people who in that 3-year term to get their license, about close to 90% never finished and got there anyway. And so you looked at it and saw this as going, this isn't a solution. This just adds to the continued demoralization because they're then teaching alongside incredibly strong special educators who continue to see, and Kimber, you say if this is true or not, they then see, as we see emergency less than certified showing up, doesn't it push down and demoralize the special education teachers that are there?
Yes. And also having open vacant positions.
Yes.
Does that does. As well. Right. And, to some extent, having a never ending supply of brand new teachers does too. I mean, They're different.
Churn is bad. Churn is bad.
And if you aren't able to, sometimes there'll be schools that are almost in crisis. The churn is so bad that any new person who comes in wants to leave. That is a challenge, and how you stem that, how you stop that. I feel like you have to give more supports to those new educators, however they got there. You know, when they're new, I think sometimes, especially in a district that feels a little crisis-y, there's a tendency to just want to be like, oh, that person has their license now, or they have an emergency license or whatever. They showed up quick, throw them in the deep end, because we need help, instead of saying, can we let them have a smaller caseload? Can we make sure someone's checking in with them? Can we make sure they have planning time? Because there's such a, because people are so, feel so resource restricted in schools, they're not thinking in a caring way about nurturing new professionals. And I wish we could somehow wrap our minds around that, because I keep seeing, you're an educator preparation, we keep preparing them and sending them out. And what I hate is when I hear them call in year one and say, I can't do this, Even if it's the education preparation programs themselves that go out and provide that additional support, somebody should be doing it, because it just feels like, it's so highly problematic to put them out there and then almost just burn through them as if they are, they're all replaceable. So,
Johnny, I see you there.
Well, yeah, there's no fast path to being a great teacher. We talk about it all the time, especially from that angle of being blue collar scholars. It's hard work to be a teacher. It's an apprenticeship in a sense. It's a developing a craft, a master craft. It starts sometimes even before you're in a program to learn those really important things, but it continues well into your career and supports around that. Just like so many of the trades, you have to have so many hours really mastering the craft. I think that's really important to remember that's part of it. And just to be thrown in any classroom, let alone classrooms in schools where there are shortages and lack of supports in general, for all students, our special educators suffered just a tremendous amount of demoralization, because they see that how important this and how great it could be. Right. That I think was always one of the most frustrating things. It's like, we know better. Why can't we do this differently? And my special education colleagues were just phenomenal at knowing this and having a toolbox of so many different pedagogical strategies that, quite frankly, if we want to call it that, general education or regular education, most of us becoming teachers didn't learn. And it was like, whoa, hold up. These are amazing things that work in classrooms in really great situations. We understood this kind of through a tunnel vision of what it meant to be a teacher. And so it's more work. It's worthwhile work. We need more great teachers. Most of the people I've taught with who went through proper programs to become special educators are the best teachers in our school districts, hands down. Right. So we need more of them, and we need them supported. And it's a no-brainer to me and to most folks in schools. And so it's really frustrating. Sometimes, why aren't we doing more to support
these music efforts? To my ears? Yes.
Well, Kimber, that's what we're trying to do here with the Busted Pencils every night now. That's why we're 5 days a week, because we want this message out there. Because, well, you said, and this is, how did we get to this point that we, a teacher shortage, a special education teacher shortage, all of the things that are out there, people are like, well, shouldn't we pay people? Yes, we should pay people more. Shouldn't we provide more support? Yes, we should provide more support. Shouldn't we provide more opportunities for those people who want to become special educators, the ability to become those people with the supports? Yeah, that's what it means to support a community around a public school and a public education, is to recognize that we have a commitment and a responsibility as a community. The idea that you, wherever you're listening right now, have a shortage of teachers, special education teachers, that's a problem. Dr. Kimber Wilkerson, University of Wisconsin-Madison, thanks for busting pencils with us tonight.
Thank you. You're listening to WRJN Racine, Southeastern Wisconsin's home for the Devil's Advocates radio show.
Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected to your local community. Here's Terry Barr with the Civic Media Radio Network.
There's a renewed effort underway to save historic buildings across Racine County. The nonprofit Preservation Racine is behind the mission.
We have a mission to identify and actively encourage the preservation of buildings, sites, and districts in the Racine County area.
Pippin Michelli with Preservation Racine. Michelli says the group is starting to list homes and businesses that deserve preservation consideration.
If we're not watchful, no one makes a decision about these things, and they get lost or ruined for new developments.
Preservation Racine is also looking to add more volunteers to support the effort. You can find more information, including meeting times, at preservationracine.org. Until next time, I'm Terry Barr.
News, talk, and sports for Racine and Kenosha, WRJN. Our Civic Media Radio Station and on the app.
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK, Waukesha's home for the Tom Allball Show. Civic Media Radio.
Buster Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. If you would like to call special education teachers, if you're out there, we want to hear from you. Great guest, Dr. Kimber Wilkerson, University of Wisconsin-Madison, special education teacher. Johnny, the shortage of special education teachers. Lots of information there. I mean, Dr. Wilkerson, you know, we got to have more of this on because, you know, we've talked about special education, or we've talked about the teacher shortage in general. But to realize, too, to say, like, and I would say, our most vulnerable students, the ones who have the most needs, are the ones that are suffering the most in this situation.
Right. And I, you know what, Tim, I think it's a bigger issue, especially when we're talking about this, of what schools, why schools have been the way they are and why we continue to do things in like bad habit patterns and not breaking those cycles and saying, hey, we know this doesn't work by and large for diverse learners. Mm. And when I say that, like, we all learn really differently. Right. And that's even all the way through to the level of who's becoming a teacher. We've modeled so much of this after a stereotype of a particular kind of teaching that's based on our primary socialization of what we experienced or saw in schools, or had sort of a socialization to what a great teacher was.
I know what teachers do. I watched them my whole life.
Well, it's one of the few, unless you were sort of raised in a business or in a trade or something, it's one of the few jobs that you've been on the job experiencing. And that's what I mean when I bring up that term primary socialization. Mm-hmm. Those habits that become neuro superhighways in our brain, the habits of mind that come to how we do things, are sort of etched in over time by our primary socialization, our experience on the job, which almost all of us becoming teachers have like 20 years of on the job, you know, socialization, for better or for worse. And because we've done things in schools the same way, by and large, mostly, and almost every school around this country and increasingly around the world, really, we have some real habits of mind around what it means to be a teacher, who can be a teacher, how teachers sound, what they say, what we do during the day, those habits and patterns. And what we know is that those habits and patterns don't work for a whole lot of learners, right? Yeah. And so then we've categorized, like, we can go on and on about this, but like we said, hey, here's an idea. Let's throw all the kids born around the same time in a room together, you know, 20 some of them with somebody who is like older than them, right? Yeah. So one adult, a bunch of kids born on the same time. This has got to be the way to do it.
This has got to work.
Right. And so that's in general, like a cursory, like, here's how we, you know, decide who's going into kindergarten, who's going into first grade. And like each year you move with that group. So that group socializes together and moves through. And every once in a while you swap out and switch up the adult. Right. And so you know, we've learned that while that, you know, by and large works, and I'm throwing up scare quotes, we know that it doesn't work great for all learners, and we can do things differently that have the flexibility and the capacity to recognize different learners. And this is something when we start to talk about school change, this is something our special educators are leaders in, because they already do so much of that, right? Dr. Wilkerson came on here tonight and talked about IEPs, individual education programs, right? And so that acknowledges, hey, we have a person here who learns, but learns with some different needs. And these essentially are really important skills for teachers. They're great arguments for why every classroom should maybe have like 18 learners in it, because I can learn the different ways my students need supports in math, in reading, in social studies, right? I can learn how they learn to be better listeners differently. I can also have capacity that my peers may teach differently than I do, right? I have a loud voice, right? My voice carries. I don't yell, but I'm pretty loud. So it's kind of almost like yell talking all the time. And that's kind of familiar for students. A teacher could also be soft-spoken and highly effective, right? So we have to be developing our capacity to understand difference, both in how our students learn and how our teachers teach. And what we know, Tim, and I hate to be the like, womp, 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 but here's some bad news, is we just increasingly keep saying, hey, it needs to look this way, and here's what it is. It needs to sound this way, and here's how it sounds. And kids, here's the activities you're going to do, and it's all the same. Right.
Well, and we didn't even get into that part too, because I was kind of getting there with Kimber, but the idea though too of, you know, the autonomy part that we talk about.
The
and I say a lot of that autonomy is being stripped away too. It's because, you know, every teacher now is being told, if you do get to the realm of being teacher, the fact that you go in there to make decisions, you find out very quickly, there's not a whole lot of decision making allowed for you. And then as we start to see more and more that, you know, scripted, programmatic, and, you know, and special educators have lots of those techniques and they understand lots of different ways, but to then even potentially feel like, and don't individualize, do this, do that, the whole, it's a mess. No wonder people were leaving teaching.
And you brought it up, Tim. You said you wouldn't want an emergency surgeon or emergency pilot. You know, there is a baseline of what it means to be a great doctor, and I'll just keep it real simple. You take a Hippocratic oath. Do no harm, right? And so this is essentially teachers doing this, and you're saying most teachers, even though it's not written in, and maybe it ought to be, right? Like, I take this oath to take this knowledge that I have, this experience developing a craft to be a great teacher, and I'm going to use it to do no harm. And then you're thrown into a situation where it feels like you're
doing harm.
And what happens is really good people in that situation say, I'm sorry, I can't continue to do this. Right. And that's probably in most cases a clarion call that we got to do things differently in our schools.
It should be, and you know, this is what I said. Come on, my neighbor, you're listening to the show. This is unacceptable. Well, this is unacceptable. The idea out there is, you know, we have the ability to create the conditions where teachers thrive. Special education teachers, wood shop teachers, although we call it tech ed now, you know, cooking teachers, elementary teachers, we have the capacity to fix the teacher shortage. And that just means leaning into and realizing how incredibly important these people are, to this point where we step up as a community and say, these are our future, these are our kids, these are our communities, these teachers matter. We're going to make sure that we keep teachers in place because they are the best for all of our kids.
Oh yeah.
Best of Pencils back tomorrow.
News, talk, and sports.
Talk about your triple play.
Get this guy a jockstrap and a cookie.
1400 AM and 99.9 and 98.1 FM, WRJN.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. Covering all the news that affects you with humor and a unique perspective. Matinaire on Air with Jane Matinaire. Weekdays 10 till noon on 99.9 and 98.1 FM and 1400 AM WRJN and on the Civic Media app.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
WRJN, your home for the Packers.
1400 AM WRJN Racine, 99.9 FM W260CV Racine, and 98.1 FM W251BU Kenosha.
And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.